Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's great to have your company once again and also have the company of my two wonderful co-hosts, Dave Johnston and Kate Bakos. Dave, how are you going?
I'm going really well, thanks Pete. We had a very enjoyable weekend. We're out Friday and Saturday night and babysitters on board, out for dinner, and then actually watched one of our neighbours play in a band with some of his mates with a few other neighbours of ours and a bunch of all their friends, and it was actually a great night. Everyone was up and dancing by the end of the third set, that's for sure.
Excellent. And you're right in the middle of school holidays at the moment, so kids everywhere, it's full on.
Yeah, it's good stuff. We're prepping ourselves in readiness for the trip back to New Zealand, which we're really looking forward to.
That's great. Kate, how are you going?
Oh, I had a little bit of Dave-style weekend. We saw a crowded house play on Saturday night at the Sydney Mime Music Bowl. It was awesome. And, yeah, it's been a long time since I've been in a crowd like that, but favourite band, it was fabulous.
Any masks being worn outside in Melbourne?
No. Right. We didn't see masks in there, not really, no.
Right. So we're certainly coming to the tail end now. I know here in South Australia, looks like we'll be getting rid of masks everywhere except for, say, aged care and hospitals. So it looks like we're certainly getting on top of it.
Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update.
We're talking about migration today, but before we get into that, Dave, do you have a property market update for us?
I'll just share with you a little bit on the federal government's national infrastructure spend and how they sort of disregarded Victoria to some degree. So the budget set aside just $208 million in new money for Victorian infrastructure projects, which is the equivalent to only 5.9% of the $3.6 billion worth of new infrastructure. Obviously, Victorian population is much bigger than 5.9%. Yeah, that was an interesting little, slight towards probably the Dan Andrews government.
Now, we're pretty used to that though, aren't we? It's kind of the same proportion of allocated rats, if I recall.
Yeah. That caught mine the last week or so. But they sort of left money in there for the East-West Link project if the government decides to bring it back on board. So that's sort of the...
So they left some money in the back pocket there.
Yeah, for something that Andrews' government took off the table.
Right.
To just wedge them a bit with local politics.
Kate, how about you? What's your market update?
Well, I'm leaning on the most recent CoreLogic report, and we've just had some data out that's actually segmented the two cities that have pulled back a little bit, Melbourne and Sydney. And I've had journalists calling and asking me to comment about this. Now, we've had an increase in listing numbers in both of these cities and some other cities, but we've certainly had, you know, a disproportionate increase in listings over what we'd really term a time that people like to go away. Especially Melburnians, we love the idea of getting out of the city and travelling now that we can. So we've got two weekends in a row that are long weekends, and all of this stock. Is it any surprise that we've seen our capital growth come off a little bit? But what's really interesting is when they segment the growth and have a look at where it's come off, we've got a real focus on the inner ring and the inner east in particular in Melbourne, and Sydney is a little bit the same. So it's the leafier, higher land value suburbs with higher mortgage amounts and houses that are worth a lot more. So the top quartile of houses that have come off, and that is what you'll generally see when you do see a changing market.
Yeah.
Right. Excellent. Thanks for that. My little property market update is I saw the headlines that foreign investment in residential property had dropped in Australia. dropped from about $10 billion to $6 billion. And that caught the headline. But when I investigated further, nobody bothered to report that foreign buyers, so far as commercial property is concerned, doubled in value in that year from $39 billion to $82 billion.
Oh,
so
goodness.
Hence why our commercial property has such low yields. You know, people paying more money for the same rent because there's more competition. And where's the competition from? Surprisingly, the US was number one. Now, I don't think this is, you know, wealthy individuals buying a corner shop. This is generally large pension funds, or as we would call them in Australia, superannuation funds. So US is number one with $20 billion worth of investment. Singapore, second, with $14 billion. Germany, $7.5 billion. Canada, $7 billion. And China at $6 billion. So there's a lot of, like our super funds invest in property, trying to get a return for their investors, the same thing's happening overseas. And obviously overseas, they see ours as a very safe investment because that's what super funds really are looking for. They're not looking for, you know, extraordinary returns as much as they'd love to get them. But, you know, superannuation is quite a risk-averse sort of investment. So I found that very interesting. Firstly, that, all right, residential did drop. And that's understandable because generally, let's say wealthy individuals do want to come and see what they're buying. They're willing to fly in from overseas to check out what they're buying. They weren't able to do that during COVID. But so far as commercial property is concerned, they're just, you know, numbers. You know, if the numbers work out, then we'll buy it. I think that will continue. The attraction of Australian, in particular commercial real estate, will continue with overseas buyers, which means we're probably going to see yields drop even further. So that means, like before, I mean, I'm going to keep the numbers very simple. They might have paid $1 million to get $100,000 in rent, but now they're paying, which is a 10% return, now they're paying $2 million to still get $100,000 return, or that's a 5% return. But I think so far as if interest rates continue to stay low and there is a lot of competition, I mean, commercial property prices will, I think, just continue to attract interest from overseas.
That's really interesting.
That's a big part of the interest, isn't it? That interest rates so low, yields are so low, therefore on cash, where is another place you can put your money on a large scale where you can get a better, much better yield? Commercial property is certainly one of those places, and we're still seen as a relative safe haven as an economy. So, yeah, it's interesting to see. What did we drop by? About $4 billion in residential, but increased by about $42 or $43 billion commercial.
Disproportionate. Yeah. And there's a couple of things that could change that. Firstly, you know, at what stage is the yield so miserable?
Mm.
And is the capital growth rate in doubt? You know, when everyone's deciding at the same time that it's no longer looking enticing. Mm. That's the first and obvious thing that could pull it back. But we could also see some, you know, policies introduced or foreign taxes or levies or whatever we want to call them, duties applied that could make it no longer so exciting.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit concerned about the yields that people are willing to accept on commercial property. You know, they're very low, very low.
They've sort of shrunk from like fives being common to fours to low threes, high twos, which is sort of quite residential property type yields, really, and residential property in Melbourne's and Sydney's. You know, so, yeah, they've really shrunk over the last 2 to 4 years.
So, yeah, since COVID. Yeah. What really concerns me is, unlike residential property, you might only get a 2 or 3% return, but you're going to get that natural capital growth. You won't get that in commercial property, so you're really buying commercial property for the rental yield. And really the only way you're going to increase the rental yield is if the landlord spends money on upgrading the property. Like if it's an office, let's say it's a 30-year-old office block, all right? Tenants aren't going to pay a huge amount of rent because there's much newer office blocks down the road. So you as the landlord would need to spend money, upgrade it to get a premium rent. So that means you're spending more money in the hope of, you know, earning more rent. That's okay, but then you've got new properties going up down the road. Anyway, we'll see. You know, unfortunately my crystal ball does not work. I have, through experience, I have seen a very similar thing happen in the 90s. Where lots of people went into commercial property at the wrong time. So I'm hoping it doesn't happen again, but let's just watch this space.
What happened to commercial property in the 90s, Pete?
The yields they were getting were well below their interest, but Having said that, interest rates in the 90s were double digit. Mm. You know, interest rates for commercial property was 20%. So in good faith, you might have bought commercial property that was returning 10% or 12% and you thought, fantastic. But when interest rates go to 20%, that is not so fantastic. We all agree, everyone that keeps an eye on what's happening in the modern economy can see interest rates are going to go up, right? How high and when, who knows? But they're certainly going to go up. Will commercial property yields follow them? I don't know.
We love hearing from our listeners and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form.
Anyway, we're taking away from our very, very important episode on migration, because that also has an impact on property, in particular residential property, because all of these migrants need somewhere to live. And we've talked about it on the show before. With rental vacancies so low, they're just going to get even lower with more people coming in looking for accommodation. But today we're really talking about the numbers, and we're also talking about our different states and territories, because it's not all one market here so far as migration is concerned. So, Kate, what can you tell us about our new migrants?
Yeah, this is an interesting chart. It was going pretty strong for, well, as long as the chart in front of me is valid for. So for 20 years until COVID hit, we were pretty much hovering between 1.1 and 2.2% growth year on year for new arrivals, and then all of a sudden it was pulled right back when COVID struck our shores, no surprises. That had an enormous impact on a lot of things, as we've talked about on the show before, from employment issues in certain sectors to university closures and to, you know, capital city markets or university markets with smaller dwellings, and it was palpable. But there's more to the stats than just new arrivals, because at the same time, we had returning expats and we also had an increase in births. So it was quite a compelling set of charts to look at, but obviously this rocked our world and was very different to what we'd been experiencing. And when we think about the cities that were earmarked for growth as well, they had an even higher concentration of new arrivals, and that was certainly something that we all recognised.
And certainly Australia was not on its lonesome there, because the whole world shut its borders. So so far as migration from other countries was concerned, it was almost nil for about 2 years. But Kate,
We were one of the last to reopen the borders.
Yeah, very true. Yeah,
we had the harder borders for longer.
Yeah. So, Kate, the story from state to state and territory to territory is quite different, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. We saw a lot of people moving out of capital cities, and in particular, no surprises, Melbourne. And we saw people fleeing for all kinds of reasons. And for me, as someone who's familiar with the Victorian market, it's very hard to put a finger on the pulse and be able to definitively say that some of these moves were purely based on COVID, whereas some were maybe initiated or brought forward, precipitated by COVID, and then others were already in the making. And if we think about the move from Sydney to Wollongong and Newcastle and the Central Coast in the decade that preceded all of this, it's a case in point that people will start to move when housing affordability bites and when opportunity increases in regions. And Victoria's not on its own with regional growth and new jobs creation. So I think this is a really interesting one to talk to, and Dave's got some great charts as well.
Dave, why don't you talk to us about your charts there, which we'll put up on our notes on the podcast.
Yeah, look, it just shows what's happened to the 12 months ending March 20 and then March 21 for the greater capital cities and then the regions. And so, look, yeah, Melbourne certainly was the most hit capital city with intrastate migration. So that is within Victoria, people moving to the regions. Minus 11,000 from Melbourne to the regions in to March 2020, and then almost 20,000 to March 21. And then interstate, Melbourne also lost another 12,000. So that was a loss of 32,000 in 2021. Not so many people leaving in up to March 20, which was the start of COVID, whereas Sydney, to Kate's point, had already had that happening. Sydney had 29,000 people leaving Sydney. And that's why Melbourne was on the great charge, if you like, towards overtaking Sydney to be the most populated city in the country prior to COVID. But very interestingly, the Centre for Population, which is a government department, and the purpose is to be the expert on population issues, recently came out and basically said that by 2425, and particularly with overseas migration, they expect it to be returned to pre-pandemic levels. So it'll take a couple of years, they think, to get it back to 160,000 coming in. Melbourne will go pretty much, in their view, things will go back to give or take the way it was prior to the pandemic. And so what they still predict Melbourne's on will come back on track, that by June 2030, it will be the largest, most populated capital city in the country. So, you know, they're the experts. They're paid to analyse and assess this information. I found that was pretty interesting. They put out this report recently.
Very compelling. And we've got a lot of infrastructure projects underway around here. Look, a lot of state government fueled spending. And, you know, to your point, Dave, we didn't see a lot in the budget from the feds for Victoria, but we've got a lot going on. And when we consider the rail upgrade that we're experiencing and how that's gearing us up to be a bigger city, I find that really fascinating. It's very exciting. And a lot of our changes for our rail have been modelled on what's going on in London, what they've been enjoying for decades. Mm. Yeah, it's certainly evident that we're gearing up for that.
So this move in particular from cities to regions would have an impact on jobs. And you've got some interesting stats there, Kate, so far as job vacancies are concerned in the regional areas.
Yeah, and I've said this before on our show, that when 10,000 people leave Melbourne, it's not a massive issue for Melbourne. But when 10,000 people arrive in Ballarat or even Geelong, which is a bigger city, that's a huge issue because the percentage change is enormous. And we're seeing this in our job vacancies. I've got a chart here that really looks like it's a bit static and then there's this big cliff, and that's showing what our poor regions have been enduring. And then it's segmented. So the five regions recording the largest monthly increases in vacancies during Feb 2022 were Outback Queensland, with 10.5% more vacancies in Feb than in January. That's a real problem. Pilbara and Kimberley in Western Australia, Central Queensland, Port Augusta and the Eyre Peninsula, and lastly, Goldfields in Southern WA. But the five regions with the biggest jumps in vacancies in Feb 2022 compared with the year prior, top of the pops are Geelong and the Surf Coast, up by 61%. Then Ballarat and the Central Highlands up by nearly 47%, then Outback Queensland, then Gosford and the Central Coast, and then finally Sunshine Coast. And these jumps in job vacancies are putting pressure on all of the businesses in these locations that have, you know, quickly become home to a really increased number of people.
Do either of you have any view on how this is going to play out? So these locations, they're certainly aligned with obviously where a lot of people are moving. Property prices have grown quite rapidly over the last couple of years. Now we've got heaps of job vacancies. Now that's going to put pressure on prices, inflation in those areas, but people are going to struggle to get work done. How are they going to, what's going to happen? How are they going to feel these roles? Yeah, what do you think is going to be the impact?
I can comment on how it feels in Geelong and Ballarat because I'm in those markets all the time. And hopefully this is helpful for our listeners. We've got locals buying in these areas. Interest rates are so low that for some people it's cheaper to buy than to rent if you're in an area where the yields are higher. We've also got investors coming back. They've got confidence. They can get credit. They're enjoying the increasing yields. And a lot of investors don't do their homework. They just look at the big headlines and say, oh, wow, Ballarat did really well last year. I'll jump on it. And they might not realise that they could be at the tail end of that. I'm not suggesting that that's the case, but you do see a lot of people knee-jerk reacting to stuff like that. So we've seen an increase in local buyers, an increase in people leaving the city, and then an increase in investors. At the moment, there's still enough tenants to soak up the demand for the investors, so the reward is still there. And we're seeing people make working from home work. And I think as long as that can work, even when the hybrid models are introduced and phasing people back, then the idea of staying put, I think, will continue because these regions are beautiful and they're not too far from the city. I've got a different feeling about regions that are more than 2 hours away because I think people will get really tired of a long commute if they're forced to come back into the office 2 or 3 days a week. But I also can say that I've seen an uptake in little 1 and 2 bedroom units in the city for this very reason. People are adopting a dual home scenario where they can.
Yeah, I agree 100% with Kate. I can see that the attraction of the regions will continue, but they have to be within commuting distance of a capital city. As our borders have opened, not only are people going to flock to our cities, but basically they're going to flock to where the jobs are. And if they can find jobs in places like, you know, Ballarat, Bendigo, Newcastle, Coffs Harbour, wherever it might be, that's where they're going to go. So I can see the attraction of regional areas staying with us for a while. Yes, COVID was the catalyst, but as more and more people experience what regional areas have to offer, you know, especially regional areas with tens of thousands of people, so they do have the infrastructure similar to a city, where they do have medical infrastructure, they might have a university there, they've got places for you to go out and eat and have coffee at, they're certainly going to be very appealing. And, you know, for the last 2 years, regional areas have outperformed capital cities so far as price growth is concerned, and I can see that continuing, at least for this year, and we'll see what happens in 2023.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Do you know what was a real surprise for me with the jobs? Because we know when we go and visit these wonderful places and there's not enough wait staff on the ground in a restaurant, or you know, queuing forever for coffee, or there's coffee shops shut because they can't get enough staff. You think to yourself, okay, is it unskilled work, or is it junior work, or crazy shifts or whatever that's on offer? But no, I'll read this out. In terms of the occupations being demanded in these areas, vacancies are largest for professional roles, 24%. Followed by technicians and trades roles, 16%, and clerical and administrative roles, 14%. So there's a wider array of jobs there in these locations that are screaming for workers. And we are seeing people adopting the tree change and the sea change.
We've lost 160,000 people coming in from overseas. The RBA is quite focused on getting, and the government, on getting unemployment down at, you know, with a 3 in front of it, because they want wages to grow. They know that if they really flood the international migrants back in, it's going to start filling a lot of these jobs. And they don't want that to happen until wage growth is sustainable and preferably above inflation, so the cost of living isn't greater than wage growth. So they're trying to tread this real balance, and that's then showing up in numbers like these. Even though most international migrants do end up living in the capital cities, but that's also why they've put money in the budget to encourage new migrants to buy properties in the regions. So as they start coming back in, they can see these job vacancies in the regions and they want them to be filled. So, you know, you can see these different sort of pieces and how they all fit together, but how they're trying to balance it. And obviously it's all been caused because we've had the borders shut for 2 years. Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see it, how it plays out moving forward, and particularly that piece of how many people are going to stay and keep moving to regional areas and being and willing to do a commute for maybe 1 or 2 days a week.
So, Kate, you mentioned sea change and tree change before, which is generally done by retirees or semi-retirees.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about that demographic that's moving out to regional areas?
I can tell you that I'll have a lot more information when we get our census data and that'll be in a couple of months. But, yes, we've got a problem where, you know, the proportion of people engaged in the workforce between 55 and 64 is greater than 64%, because that's highlighting that these areas will experience, you know, a drop in workers as this population moves into retirement. And there are quite a few locations here on the map. Barossa is one of them, close to you. Hobart is another one. Alice Springs, Port Hedland, Mount Isa. So we have certain locations here that are all quite different and signalling that across an array of industries, we'll be screaming out for people. And that will become a costly issue for these locations as well, because we'll have a lot of people also then on the pension.
Yeah. So not only is moving to the regions popular for those people who want to work remotely or work remotely for part of the time, but you know it continues to be very popular for those people who are retiring because they can sell their city place, buy a very similar country place, and have money left over to have a very lovely retirement. Hence the popularity of places like the Gold Coast, the North Coast up in New South Wales, Geelong and the Surf Coast in Melbourne. So, you know, it makes sense because at the moment, and I'm sure it will continue, property prices are cheaper in the country. You sell a city home, buy a country home, still lots of money left in your pocket, and you can have a very lovely retirement. Certainly that's what's happening in our places such as Victor Harbour. A lot of that's happening, which is only an hour away from Adelaide. Obviously, people are willing to travel further away if they live in Melbourne or Sydney, but about an hour is about the maximum people would want to move so far as Adelaide is concerned. And Victor Harbour, Port Elliot and Goolwa are those towns where a lot of people are moving to retire and semi-retire.
I think the fact that there's so much information on this and they're, you know, our government is completely aware of the fact that we have this issue, we can anticipate incentives or initiatives, whatever we want to call it, encouraging older people to stay in the workforce, maybe in a part-time capacity, but I think we'll see some really interesting directives and ideas coming out to address this.
It is a risk for those locations that have the higher percentage of retirees because obviously they're not working or, you know, most of them are not working. So it's going to impact the size of the economy and the strength of those local economies of those places. So they're, you know, from a property perspective, potentially locations to be a bit more wary of. I think we're going to start to see a reversion back to the mean of what was the historical trends prior to COVID in the coming years. But I do think there'll be winners of the regional locations but others will fall away. You know, I don't think it's sustainable what's been occurring. And we've had, you know, historically, the Australian property market has had periods of major migration where, for example, you've seen more people than normal move from Melbourne and Sydney to, say, a Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, etc. They've been the sort of two historical places that have seen it the most, but not as widespread as we've just seen through COVID. But I do think it'll start to come back as the centre for population also suggests. And I think we'll see some of the regional locations and those without as much underlying economic strength or that proximity to the CBDs probably be flatter from a property price perspective for a much longer time. And that we've seen that happen to a Gold Coast, for example, at different times over the journey where its market's been really flat for a long period of time after a massive period of migration into the city. And I think that's part of what's going to play out over the coming years as, you know, life starts to resemble what it used to prior to the pandemic. What do you both think?
Well, there's a lot of logic in what you've just said, David. And we've always got to be careful to treat, you know, every region as its own, you know, interesting location with different jobs and all the rest of it. Mm. But I would be very, very careful about doing anything speculative without the research. I had someone just chatting to me yesterday about a holiday house in Rye, and you've really got to have a look at the rate of growth that area has experienced and ask yourself what's driving it to continue doing that, or are you buying at the peak and is it vulnerable? Could it come off? And what things can trigger areas coming off? I grew up down on the peninsula and you could see the impact of recessions or property markets pulling back when, you know, all of the for sale signs were along the coast. And the same can be said for places like Phillip Island. And that's always a stark warning for me. I think you've got to do your homework. You can't decide to do something speculative on a whim.
Yeah, 100%.
So Always very important to do your research. We're coming to near the end of our migration episode, but one thing, really just to sum up, migration plays a key role in property, in particular residential property, because all of these people need somewhere to live. In the first instance, they're going to be renting, so that's going to be putting pressure on rents. But then once they get their permanent residency and they have enough deposit, then they'll be looking to buy. But it's also interesting to find out where they're going to live. Are they going to live in capital cities? Which capital cities are they going to live in? Are they going to move to the regional areas because property is more affordable out there and there are jobs out there? That's one of the negatives of the past in the regions. You go out to the country areas and it's very hard to find a job, but it's certainly not that case now. So watch this space. If you're doing your research, as Kate's talking about, which is really, really important, you need to keep your eye on what's happening, where it's happening, and very importantly, understand why it's happening, and then you might be able to capitalise on that migration wave. Please don't go away, listeners. We do have our gold nuggets from Kate and Dave. We'll be with you in a tick.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
So, Kate, what's your gold nugget?
Well, my gold nugget is for any investors who are thinking about approaching the regions. After you've done your homework and you've decided it's the right place for you to park your money and to look for the return that you're after, whether it be capital growth or rental yield or a bit of both, I think it's very, very important to work out what the locals like. So when in Rome, you do what the Romans do. I apply that saying when I go into other markets because it's no good focusing on the things that you like or that capital city dwellers like without exploring what's popular for tenants in the region. And Ballarat's a fantastic case in point. I remember being told years ago, make sure the house is warm and make sure the yard is secure. And if it's got a powered shed, bonus points. So always tap into a great property manager and find out what you should be looking for.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Kate. Dave?
I use the when in Rome saying when I'm eating at a different, Chinese restaurant or Vietnamese or Italian, and I have the local beer all the time.
I'm the same, actually.
That's great.
All right. So many people might be aware of the Centre for Population, and they are a resource for budding property investors and migration experts to look into as you're doing your research for where you want to buy. So just a little bit on them. It's, as I said, a government department. Purpose is to be the expert on population issues. They prioritise engagement, coordination and collaboration with governments, academia, business, community groups and the public. And they draw on knowledge and policy insights from the ABS and other state and local governments to undertake modelling and analysis to transform data into valuable insights. So to ultimately inform population policy through different publications, insights and advice, and they report to Treasury. So, yeah, if you're looking to get some population data, that's a place for our listeners to go.
Excellent. Have you got a website or URL there, Dave?
Yeah, look, I don't, but okay. I would say Google.
We'll pop in the show notes.
Google Centre for Population.
Easy. All right, thank you very much, Kate and Dave, and thank you very much, listeners. Some important information there. Things have been very different over the last 2 years, but they're getting back to normal, so far as migration is concerned especially. So keep an eye out for that. All right, Kate and Dave, have a great week, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.
You too, Pete.
See you later.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the themes discussed, take a listen to episode 13. How age and stage of life can impact your property plan and selection. Episode 53, Diversification 101, how and why to plan for diversification within your property portfolio. Episode 75, how to spot an up-and-coming suburb, understanding demographics and stats. Episode 81, holiday houses, delirium or dream. And episode 111, future-proofing our property market and economy, tackling our ageing population and how to retire wealthy.
The
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.